Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Namattu acariyassa. So this past week, I've been Ajahn and I have both been reading through Ajahn Chah's teachings, talks, the books, and it's been an interesting kind of exercise to read the four different publications of Ajahn Chah's that have been done over the years, to read them all in the space of a week, kind of swimming in Ajahn Chah the last week, and it's been kind of fun. Yesterday morning, up at Maikuti, early morning sit, I was just things that I've been reading and of course reflecting on and considering, just kept coming up in the meditation, in practice, and I was finding myself up in my kuti, just sort of my face all wet with tears, and just thinking of with gratitude of Ajahn Chah's teachings, and just a lot of piti coming up. It was very quite wonderful. But also, just before evening puja, I finished the last book, and I feel quite happy to put it down. That'll be but I thought I'd sort of share. It's one of the. I mean, it's been kind of nice to do that, to read all these talks of Ajahn Chah's, teachings of Ajahn Chah's. It's also sort of an over stimulation or over bombardment as well. But I just thought I would maybe let things come up in my mind and share what sticks in my mind. A lot of it just sort of this goes down the. It's like one of the similes that Ajahn Chah uses, images that Ajahn Chah uses, is the image of the dam, building a. When you build a dam, you've got to build a spillway along with it. So if you don't have a spillway in your practice, then you. The dam breaks. So a lot of stuff has been going down the spillway as well. Certainly, the book is eventually going to be structured is in terms of Sila Samadhi Panya, which is Ajahn Chah comes back to those fundamental teachings over and over again. There's hardly a talk really that he gives that doesn't address those aspects of just the path. And I think in both his teaching as well as his own practice, the kind of integration of the path and the inseparability of the path was something that he emphasized, that Sila, Samadhi, Panya were not different things. They were or fundamentally different. They were all aspects of a path of training, a path of a way of living, a way of penetrating truth in the same way that, and he gives the image over and over again of the mango, and in Thai, especially in Thai, the image comes off really well because he gives the image of the mango when it's a bud, when it's a small fruit, when it's a green fruit, when it's a ripe fruit. And they actually have different names for each one of mangoes are a big feature in hot season in Thailand. So. And you actually have different names for each part of that process of the maturing of the mango, and Ajahn Chah saying that the path is essentially the same, and we've got different names for it, but it's all part of this path of truth, and one part of it is sila, and one part of it is part of the process is samadhi, another part of the process is panya. And but they're not separate. They work together. They function together. They have to. They're a parcel of the whole picture of truth. So that in Lumpur's keeping of Sila, both for the lay community as well as the monastics, he was very uncompromising. There wasn't excuses for not keeping precepts. There wasn't excuses for not being really using the training rules and the ways of restraint for our benefit, so that there was a real integrity there, and he encouraged everybody to use the precepts, and in particularly one, using the training precepts for understanding how the mind works, understanding how intention works. You keep the precepts in order to establish a standard that creates a certain amount of friction. Causes a bit of difficulty in your life, causes some resistance. That was in checking the editing work that that Wisdom has done, Josh has done. Ajahn Chah emphasizes this point, and And there's this query, and sort of a stroke through this, you know, the precepts keep, you know, makes for suffering or something, and difficulty, causes conflict, and Josh is sort of, just, he can't have said this, this can't be true, is it? It's like, yes, this is true, it causes conflict, it causes a sense of resistance in the mind. If you're, you know, if you're really going against desires and going against your habits and your conditioning, there's going to be a sense of conflict in the mind. But then, that's what we learn from. That's what you investigate. That's what you use to understand. You know, what is the way out of suffering? Because if there's no conflict, then, you know, we're keeping our sort of our desire mind and our opinions quite well stoked and well lubricated, and nothing gets in their way. So that ideally, the keeping of the precepts is a you know, it stops the flow of the desire mind, and stops the flow of our habitual tendencies, so that we get an opportunity to look at that, watch that. And of course, Ajahn Chah said, this is a good thing. This is something that really does help us to understand the nature of truth. And that's right from the beginning of keeping precepts, it's being used as a tool, and being used as a means of penetrating truth, so that it isn't just kind of a perfunctory standards that you keep to fulfill some obligation in order to be a card-carrying Buddhist. It's fundamental to the path, or it's not something that you pick up and do for when you're a beginner, and then you can dispense with them as you become more adept in the path, they're not relevant anymore. It doesn't work that way. They're part and parcel of the path of liberation, of path of freedom. So that keeping of sila, there's wonderful images sometimes sila helping us to establish ourselves in doing of that which is good and that which is wholesome, and he's saying these people come and ordain, and then they go out, and they want to leave the monastery. They want to go out and be out in the world, and even they'll go, you get all fired up to join the army and go off to the front. And so they're happy to do bad things. They're happy to die doing bad things. So why aren't they happy, you know, just to stick with doing good things? It's this lovely sort of image, having that sense of his both chagrin and amazement at the human condition, where people sacrifice all sorts of things to do the unwholesome, but to stay within the bounds of the wholesome and the good. It's such a difficult and rare thing. In the training of the mind, and in the developing of samadhi, Lumpa would again, it's sort of the integration of the whole path was a key feature. So that sometimes his instructions in samadhi are frustratingly sparse or seemingly so straightforward as to not giving you much to work with. It's like, sit down, watch your breath, be attentive to the breath going in, the breath going out. The breath will get more subtle, then it'll stop, and you'll be in fourth jhana. Okay. Did I miss something here? That's what it's like. Then that's what it's like in fourth jhana. That's where you really start. Things get really interesting. But there are some of the discourses where talks where he does get a bit more detailed. But a lot of the times there is a sort of ordinariness to his teaching, and but it's also again the sort of the integrated quality where it's not something separate from the whole training. And some of the images that stick is the image that he gives of the spider, which is sort of one of my favorite images with the to practicing Dhamma. He says, you have to. Practicing Dhamma, practice meditation, you'll have to remember all that mantras or go very far and just look at a spider and see what a spider does. So the spider weaves its web and then sits in the center of its web. And he said, when an insect or a fly comes along and touches the web and gets in contact with the web, with the stickiness of the web, then the spider rushes out and grabs at the insect and binds it up and brings it back to the center where it eats it and consumes it. So he said it's like the web is like the five senses, the external senses, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. And coming to the center is coming to the mind. So our mind should be, when the senses contact, the sights contact the eye, sound contacts the ear, and just the mind goes out to apprehend that, and brings it back into the mind, the heart, and then binds it with the anicca and dukkha anatta, seeing it, experiencing it with with mindfulness and then the wisdom of seeing its impermanence, its unsatisfactoriness, its non-self. So that practice is this wonderfully sort of natural, has a natural quality to it, and that is the so we need to cultivate that sense of. Of being attentive to the senses, being mindful in it, and on each contact, and drawing it into the heart, so that it's both seen clearly and then seen with right view, seen with right, seen with truth, the truth of Dhamma, and that sense of those characteristics of truth, of impermanence, of unsatisfactoriness, of non-self. There's not-self. These are the ways in which we see the underlying nature of things, see their true nature, and thereby able to relinquish, to let go. And similarly, that theme of developing the understanding of the senses and using the senses as a means of say a means of liberation rather than seeing them as an obstruction. And this is what makes the mind peaceful, settled, or still. And it's not because we don't experience things, but it's because we experience them with mindfulness and wisdom that our minds can become settled, samadhi can be established. It's not a shutting out, and that's as Lumpa talks about that, and he struggled with meditation, he struggled with practice, and he tried all sorts of things. I can still hear this one talk where it's in the Food for the Heart. Sense contact, the one on sense contact, and he's talking about when he was a young monk and trying to learn how to meditate, and he'd get distracted all the time, and it's these external distractions are really what is the problem. If only I didn't have to be bothered by these external sounds. And in tropical countries there's always something going on, even if it's just the insects. So you see, you've got some beeswax, which is quite soft, and rolled it up in balls and stuffed it in his ears, shut out the external sound so he could be peaceful. And of course, there wasn't the external sounds, but there was this just sort of humming, and couldn't hear anything outside, but there was still this sound was bothering me. So it's not wasn't the sound that was a problem, it was the mind that was holding it. Now that and Lumpa gives another image of that understanding the understanding the senses and sense contact in order to be truly peaceful. The talk on Tutyopodila. where the Sutopoti lies, this very learned monk who has many, many disciples, and then you realize, and then it's criticized by the Buddha being, say, knowledgeable but not practicing. So he goes to find a teacher, and of course he's so well known, so respected, has so many disciples, that nobody was willing to teach him. Finally, he found this novice who was willing to teach him. Novice was an arahant, and the novice's instruction to him was to using the image of catching a lizard that goes into a termite mound. So then in the termite mound there's six holes or six entrances and exits, and you know, the way that one catches the lizard is to plug up the, because termite mounds are quite large, or can be quite large, so it could be just about anywhere, and to plug up the five of the entrances, and then to be vigilant and stay watching at the at that last exit, that last entry point, the last hole, so that the so that guarding the senses of eye, ears, nose, tongue, and body, sort of to be very restrained in those, to sort of cut those off, to be sort of not getting engaged in those, and put the attention on the mind, so that whatever one experiences, one experiences it at the mind, and one apprehends more clearly the, say, the culprit. Where the problems are being created, so that that sense of really bringing all the attention back to the mind, one's observant of the senses, but using restraint and a cutting off, in the sense of not getting infatuated with the whole realm of whether what one sees, hears, smells, tastes, touches is pleasant or unpleasant, whether it's agreeable or disagreeable, whether it's wanted or not wanted, whether one likes it or dislikes it, but coming back to the mind, and where that is experienced, where those reactions are created and formed and proliferated on, that that image of coming back to the center, coming back to the base, coming back to the one place where everything comes and goes. This is really the way of establishing a stability within the mind, within the heart, establishing samadhi, the firm firmness of the mind, stability of the mind. One of the things that struck me in Lumpa's instructions on developing samadhi, he almost invariably uses mindfulness of breathing as the base, but then he will emphasize a lot on the reflections on the body, reflections on establishing Those are the two, you know, in terms of meditation objects, those are really the two main objects. But when he said, you know, like holding, you know, the context of the object, whatever object one uses, or, you know, what do we fix the mind on? And he said, you know, one needs to fix the mind on a point of balance, so that you know, whatever meditation object one is using, or whatever reflection, because there's many reflections, investigations, contemplations that Lumpa himself used and constantly refers to in the meditation. But what is important to establish the mind on, or fix the mind on, or try to hold the mind, is this point of balance. And I think that's a really important aspect of say of Lumpa's teaching, that the, you know, how do we hold the mind in a place of balance? Because I think Lumpa himself was so gung-ho you know, that he would and had so much resolve that sometimes he could be, you know, he could be out of, you know, really out of balance, and I think that's the same for all of us, in, you know, for various reasons. I mean, Lumpa, I think, was sometimes his extraordinary resoluteness and determination, but also he was extraordinarily kind of passionate. Strong desires, so that, and that of course experienced many very strong moods, and consequently the mind would swing, so that, you know, he certainly seeing the value, importance, necessity of holding a place of balance within the heart, and actually bringing that up quite consciously. You know, how do we create a sense of balance? For all the, you know, in all the different ways that one trains, and the ways that one pushes, and the ways that one investigates, you know, the point of balance is always a point of letting go, a point of not clinging, and of course that is really the kind of a, you know, an essential part of Lumpa's teaching, is that the emphasis on letting go, and as I read the other night about abandonment, you know, it just comes up over and over and over again, and that says, you know, in terms of kind of the, you know, a wisdom teaching, that wisdom of letting go, of not binding oneself to the kind of mechanics and dynamics of the sense realm and the sense desires, not getting bound to the opinion making realm that the mind so easily throws up, the whole sense of self, how is the relinquishing and letting go of kind of imaginations of self, how we create a sense of I out of everything. So that point of non-clinging, relinquishment, of letting go, and this comes up over and over and over again, and seeing that we, and that's where the investigations and meditations on impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self, Four Noble Truths, these sort of kind of meat and potatoes practices, they're fundamental basics that are common, ordinary, and but they have very profound results when one is assiduous in applying them. If one really brings them up into the heart and really holds them with awareness and clarity and clear comprehension, and then to let them go, so that and that there really isn't an alternative to letting go and relinquishing, because everything else is suffering. To hold things in a way that increases desire, increases opinions, increases our sense of self, of the I position, is just more suffering. And why would you do it? Why would anybody do it? And it sort of, when one reads Ajahn Chah's teachings, it just says, right, and it's sort of so clear. And one puts it down and gets into some cloud of delusion again. But it, to hear it coming from such a clear place reminds one that that is, really is possible, and is possible for everybody. Bringing those teachings up and really applying them, using them in the meditation. When one gets up from the meditation, to carry them with one, to apply them, to not drop those applications of mindfulness and clear comprehension and reflection and investigation, to not let them drop away, but to carry them with one in all postures and all situations. And you start seeing the mind revolving around Dhamma more and more. And that's where I think one of the elements that of Lumpur's teaching that comes up in so many different situations is where Lumpur sees very clearly that relationship between the conventional and the transcendent. In Thai, it's samut and vimut, and samut is sort of the whole realm of convention, determined reality, how we suppose things to be in just ordinary idiom. If you sort of said samut vai, so suppose it was like this. And that's sort of suppositions that we create around the conventional realm of a being, a world, good and evil, happiness and suffering. These are all sort of created things that are formed out of the conventional realm, and we keep reacting to them, we keep tinkering with them, we keep being fascinated by them, we're aghast by them, we consider them to be me and mine, and of course they're constantly creating problems for us. Whereas the whole realm of vimutti in Pali is liberation, is freedom. And by seeing through, by penetrating, and by relinquishing the whole realm of the conventional and the supposed and determined elements of existence, we can live in, experience, penetrate the realm of the transcendent. And that's something that we can do in the present moment, it's because of our experience and seeing clearly of the conventional realm that we can can experience the transcendent. It's not that one destroys the conventional realm; it no longer exists, and we can just dwell in the transcendent. It's like one sees clearly, so clearly the conventional realm, but it's also how we have to live within the forms of conventional forms. It's just that as long as we have a body and mind, as long as we have a life force, we have to live within that container. We have to rely on conventions. It's learning how to use them skillfully. It's like Lumpa, from the realm of the perspective of the transcendent, we don't have any. We're not a being. We're not not an individual entity. Didn't have any names. Those are all conventions. You can't, to function on a day-to-day basis, you've got to use conventions. You can't. It's just like everybody is a person. But if you're in a group and you want to call somebody, you can't just sort of say person. You've got to use names. I want to call Obasu or Pasuko. They use their names. It's sort of calling out in the group, person, I'd like this done. And it doesn't work. So it might be true according to the transcendent, but it doesn't work well in the real world. So that the teaching that Lumpa gave was just so immensely, one, it was a brilliantly attuned to the transcendent and to liberation, but it was also practically tied to how to live and function and be a harmonious and beneficial force within the conventional realm as well. So that that teaching of the conventional and transcendent is something that he saw penetrated very clearly, and how badly we're stuck in the conventional, how easily we're fooled by the determined conditioned realm. So that to to bring it into question, to investigate it, to try to understand that. So what is it that keeps us trapped, and what is the realm of freedom? So those are a few thoughts that have come up over the distillation of what I've been reading, and just thought I'd share that with you.